Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader. And Jim, please tell us about our special guest today.
Man, oh man, do we have a great guest today. This is, I think we have all agreed this man, at least the character, suffers one of the most ideal deaths, getting shot in the head by Haley Atwell. Oh my goodness gracious, what a way to go. Anyway, let's introduce a great, great actor and who has an important role in this particular scene. Fab Sentino, thanks for joining us all the way from the UK.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me and inviting me on your show.
It's fun and exciting. Always get to talk to people directly involved in the production. And why don't we go over this minute? Hal, why don't you give us the lowdown on what's going on here?
All right. So minute 40. On the chaotic streets of Brooklyn, Fred Clemson, secretly Hydra agent Kruger, clutches his shoulder in the passenger seat of the getaway car. Peggy Carter, her face set with determination, takes aim with her pistol, but is distracted as Kruger sets off a car bomb in front of the antique storefront. She returns to the middle of the street, taking aim again at the fleeing car. Peggy fires her pistol, striking the driver. The car swerves as the driver slumps, blood staining his shirt. A frantic taxi driver nearby shouts, "What are you doing? Buddy, you all right? Hey, this guy's been shot." Kruger, undeterred, shoves the dead driver aside, seizes control of the taxi, and floors the gas, aiming directly at Peggy. Steve Rogers, his newly enhanced body surging with strength, leaps into action, tackling Peggy out of the vehicle's path just as it roars past. Peggy, sprawled on the pavement, glares up at him. "I had him." "Sorry," Steve calls, already sprinting after Kruger. He crashes through the glass front of a bridal shop, mannequins toppling in his wake. "I'm sorry," he yells, vaulting over a fence with a newfound agility, his eyes locked on the fleeing traitor.
What an exciting minute. This is wonderful. And Fab, you were right in the middle of all this thing.
I was a part of a huge action sequence there.
That is amazing. I have to ask, we've been following the previous scenes. We had a little red-haired boy that got thrown in the river in the Mersey. And was this part also filmed in Liverpool, or is this down in Pinewood? Where was this at?
No. So that scene there was shot on a street called Dale Street in Manchester.
Oh, in Manchester. Okay. We've
been talking a lot as we've been going along about how artfully the filmmakers recreated 1940s Brooklyn. And I'm curious, since you were there, how much of that was, you know, green screen? How much of it was CGI, as far as you can tell? How much of it was real?
Well, that's a great question, because a lot of people ask me, where was this film shot, or at least where was my scene shot? When I arrived on set, Dale Street is a huge street in Manchester where they shoot a lot of old film, whether it's period or even current. But what they do is they dress the shop fronts. They have, you know, lots of different builders there, and all the construction people, they turn up and they just basically put like a face of the store or the shop that they want in front of the building, and they just kind of change it. But the most wonderful thing about the days that I spent on Dale Street is that they really went to town. I'm talking, they re-tarmacked the floor to the point where they could line pipes to get the steam out to make it look like, you know, New York. Obviously, as we know, that in the States, you know, you have this the iconic steam that comes out of the road and the streets, and it was really, like, you know, surreal is probably the right word. On both ends of the street, they would green screen, and they would basically kind of, on one end of the street, you'd have the Brooklyn Bridge and its ambience, and on the other end, I'm not quite sure what was there, because I think it was just one end that they were capturing, and so therefore I was, you know, such a young novice, such a young actor on this huge set with all these different runners and riggers and construction workers and, you know, all these people, all this crew, and I was completely overwhelmed. But the one good thing about Dale Street is that the buildings either side that mirror each other are all red bricked. So they are built with red brick with the fire escape stairs and so on. So it kind of looked like period New York. And I think that the so north of England, you still get the cobbled streets, the red brick buildings. And I think that I'm not sure whether it was Paramount or Universal that kind of invested in this street, but they were like, well, you know what? Seeing as it's so difficult to shoot in the States and to close off streets and you know and do all these things, etc., why don't we kind of invest money into this street in the UK where we can go there and shoot all the time? And then I discovered that so many films, or at least scenes of big films, were shot on this street.
Yeah, the dial. I was just looking at Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Apparently, uses the same street up there in Manchester. So, wow, it an incredible cottage industry
Phenomenal.
from a
Yeah,
from a real cottage.
phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, tell me. Let's back up a little bit. How?
Yeah.
Where did you intersect with this movie? What was it like? Did you have to audition? Where were you pulled out
Yeah,
into
yeah,
this?
yeah. Of course. So I was a very, very new actor. I mean, I'm 43 now. I was 24 then. So it was a long time ago, right? So I get the call, and my agent says, listen, you know, like you've got an audition for this role. You're playing a young Italian American, and therefore you're going to love it. Here's the script. Learn your lines and go to the office in Hammersmith, and you'll be meeting a casting director called Priscilla John. So I'm like, you know, really excited to go and do this audition, and you know, I've learned my lines, and I get there, and I'm really sort of, you know, enthusiastic about this part, and I'm sat with all these other actors, and I go in, and I just blew her away. I just kind of, you know, I don't know. I was like this young Bugsy Malone. I thought this film that was called Frostbite, right? So the film was called Frostbite because I think they didn't want any reveals of the fact that we were shooting Captain America, especially for young men, like young guys like me at the time. Social media was very limited. We may have had Twitter at the time, I can't remember rightly. And so therefore, you never know, someone might say something, and then the next thing, Dale Street is flooded with people, right? So I turned up and I did this audition, and then I was paired off with someone else, and then I was brought back in the room, and she was like, can you do that again? And now I want more energy, and I want, like, you know, I want you to be this wise guy. You know, you're this wise guy that drives this car for this other wise guy, and I want more energy. So I kind of gave it what I could from what I knew at the time. But I had the upper hand, you see, guys, because my parents were raised in New York. They were raised in Manhattan. So when I was a kid, my mother, I always had the accent in the background, that broad Brooklyn accent in the background. I could always hear it, right? So I kind of had a little bit of the upper hand there. And then that was that. 2, 3 days later went by. I get a phone call saying they'd like to offer you this part of this young kind of character. And I was like, okay, cool. Well, you know, what is it? The same scripts? Is it you know, am I playing the same person? Oh, you know, they're gonna accommodate you somehow. So I was super excited at the time, as you can imagine. You know, it was my first mainstream film. I'd done previous films before that, independent on an independent level, and I'd done lots of theatre and lots of training, but this was my first mainstream film. So I was like super excited. You know, I get the phone call, I get the side sent to me, I get a driver who picks me up, he takes me to rehearsals, and
Nice.
I'm going to Shepperton, I'm going to Pinewood, I've got this driver. My mum's like, you know, where are you going? And I said, oh, I'm going to work, Ma. You know, and she's like, what is this? And I'm like, I don't know, I'm an actor, you know, like, so it was a pretty special moment for me and for my family. And then I arrive and I just thought to myself, why are there all these big target signs like the one you have behind you, Jim? And I thought, oh, maybe it was a previous film, you know, like, silly me. I'm yeah, in my early 20s, and it's my first gig, and you know, like, I'm not even skeptical at this point. I'm just like so overwhelmed at the sets, and you know, like all these little buggies that are driving around. So I just kind of, I just took it in my stride and did my rehearsals, and then I just waited for my, for my dates to go in. How much of this do you want me to talk about,
Oh,
Jim?
keep going. No, you're doing great.
Oh yeah, okay. So basically, I think I'm going to be in this film called Frostbite. I have no idea who's in this film. As far as I'm concerned, I'm sure that I'm going to be acting alongside some fairly big actors, but I had no clue. Come to the day of principal photography for me, I basically, or my first day, should we say, per se, I basically arrived to Dale Street, and I got put into a trailer, and it had my name on it, and it had Kruger's driver. So I was like, cool, I'm playing a driver, and I've still got my lines in my head, and and I'm thinking, okay, cool, who am I driving exactly? Next thing I know, I see Stanley Tucci walking in front of me, right?
Nice.
And then I see Hayley Atwell walking in front of me. And I see Christopher Evans walking with another man. I'm just like, oh my God, like, is this the same film? Like, surely not, I'm recognizing all these people. I mean, Stanley Tucci, I was always a fan of anyway. But Hayley Atwell, I'd recognize from something else. And obviously, Christopher Evans, I knew his face immediately. And I'm saying to this runner, I'm like, dude, like, what is this film? Like, what am I, whose scene am I? I didn't even understand the call sheet, put it that way. That's how new of an actor I was. I was probably like, 100 and something on the call sheet, and then I saw number one, Christopher Evans, and I'm like, Frostbite. I'm thinking, oh, well, I'm working on a film called Frostbite. My agent's calling me up, checking in on me, saying, Fab, everything okay? Are you comfortable? Are you relaxed? Like, good, let me know, keep me posted. And then obviously I get brought into this production room in like another Winnebago, another trailer, and she's like, look, Fab, we have to tell you that you are working on this film called Captain America. Please sign here.
Wow.
Right?
Was that an NDA?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm like, Captain America? What? It didn't even ring. It didn't even, the penny didn't even drop, guys. I was just like, what's that? Captain America. Like, it rang a bell, but I couldn't marry it up, immediately. I was maybe a bit slow at the time because I was nervous and I was overwhelmed and I couldn't quite join the two. And then it's sort of like, while speaking to other actors and hearing that Tommy Lee Jones is in the film and all these other people are in the film, and I'm just like, holy shit. Now I definitely need the bathroom. Now I'm feeling all sorts of things in my stomach. I was like sweating. I was, nauseous. I was, and I was like, I'm working on a Marvel film. Straight away, I called my agent. I was like, Lee, and he was like, "What's wrong? Everything okay? I'm working on a Marvel film, so." And he couldn't believe it either. And he was like, "Right, that makes sense as to why they were so kind of cagey and quiet about certain things that he was asking for his client." So I'm like, I'm in the trailer, and I'm sweating, and I'm going over my lines, and then the director comes and knocks on the door, and he's like, Fab, and he was like, what's going on? Everything okay? And I'm like, yeah, everything's fine. I'm just doing a vocal warm up sort of thing. No, I wasn't. I was shitting myself. And
Was this Joe or a first assistant director?
This was Joe. This was Joe.
Okay,
Joe
yeah.
was really lovely. I've got such good memories of Joe. He's such a generous man. And he was like, look, he said to me, Fab, he said, I'm going to get you to improvise some things. We're going to have some alternative shots, and whatever makes the cut, makes the cut. But I can assure you, we hired you for a reason. So if you cut, be comfortable, be relaxed, have fun. Have fun with the dialogue, have fun with this, have fun with that. And obviously for me, I kind of thought, this is amazing. This is the real, this is a real gig. You know what I mean? So I then got to meet Richard Armitage, who was my co-star. And
Right.
I didn't really recognize Richard at the time. I hadn't seen Spooks. I hadn't seen all these other things that he had been in. And I was just so happy to work with this man. And he was so delightful with me, so accommodating, so warm. He was like, anything you need, any advice, blah, blah, blah. Just be nice and relax and let's have fun with it. And we did exactly that. And Joe allowed me to do some improvisation on the day. And it wasn't bad. It just wasn't needed. You know, whatever made the cut, made the cut. And I'm so happy. And still to this day, people ask me, oh my God, I can't believe you were in the first Avenger, you know, and I'm like, yeah, blink and you'll miss me. But you know, I still made the cut, and it was the best thing I think so far that I've ever done, because to be recognized for Captain America for such a small part, you know, is such a big thing for me. And what an experience. And even to have been directed by Joe Johnston, and believe it or not, on the day there was quite a bit of dialogue that was recorded. Like, for example, when I'm on the sidewalk with my other sort of, like, you know, wise guys, when he comes out of the library, what we think is a library, right? And then it kind of goes through and he's in a lab and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what's going on? And he's like, drive, drive. And what are you doing? And he's like, you know, put the ignition on. I'm like, okay, I'm driving. You know, what are you doing? You know, and I'm this young wise guy. I think that I truly believe that it wasn't the dialogue that was a problem. It was the fact that we have to respect a timeline in this film, and we have to respect that other things need to be favored. But apart from that, guys, I would do it all over again. And I had the best 2 weeks of my life, and they paid me so well. And even for a young actor, I was like, oh my God, I'm being paid like a proper actor, you know. And they put me in the best hotels, and I was dining with Hayley Atwell and all the other guys of the day and at night time, and everyone was just superb. There was no ego, there was a bit of favoritism, but that was understood at the time. But all the cast, co all the other co-stars were great, and I'll never forget it. You know what I mean? I was a part of a legacy. I was a part of something, and it was the first one as well.
Man,
The
I
first
love your
Marvel.
story about the dime finally dropping and that this was a Marvel movie. But I think we have to give you some credit here. This was still very early in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. There'd been Iron Man, there'd been one or two Hulk movies, but this was still very early. So the fact that being in a Marvel movie then would be a lot different than, you know, than being in a Marvel movie now, let's say.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, for 1 minute, you know, when I was there, I was saying to myself, like, don't forget, Fab, that this is a Hollywood, this is a blockbuster film.
This is a big
You know,
tentpole.
you know, I mean, I know that things are different now, and they're probably a lot bigger budgets, and what we've, you know, like, how advanced we are with technology and all the facilities that these guys have to make these amazing films. Back then, that was an amazing film with CGI, with all these other things, and with some of the top actors that are out there, you know. And I was just so relaxed. None of it fazed me at all. And I think that's what I take from it. You know, I kind of, I even if I had like 20 seconds in this film, I made it the best 20 seconds at the time, you know. And you know, when it came out, I was invited to the screening, and they were all so lovely and made me feel like a part of the cast, even though, you know, I was the smallest part. And that's when I learned it's not about the size of the part, you know. It's about the fact that you made the cut of the film. There's no such thing as a small part, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, your role, small as it seems, you know, for while you're watching the movie, I was rewatching Avengers Endgame the other night, and they have the end credit sequence where all the actors are signing off. They're doing their autographs and the names. And the particular scene that they use for Hayley Atwell is where you're getting shot in the head by Hayley Atwell. And it's like for one, you know, maybe two frames, you're part of her farewell appearance. So, you
Also
know,
his farewell appearance. Right. Yes. Quite
Exactly.
literal.
How fortunate am I? How fortunate am I to still, my scenes are still getting played, you know, you know, and it so happens to be that scene, you know. with Hayley, with Peggy Carter. And I think it is an important scene because that's the turning point of the film, right? The turning point of the film is now we get to see, how heroic Captain America can really be. You
Exactly,
know,
yeah.
they trialed him. It could have gone wrong. It didn't go wrong. He's like, wow, I can use these hands. Wow, I'm actually quite fast. Wow, I've got all this power. And I'm right bang in the middle of all of that. Do you know what I
And
mean? And
we have
this
got to.
assassin, sorry, go on, Hal.
Oh, sorry, Fab, I didn't mean
Yeah.
to interrupt, but
No. Of
it's
course not.
also it's that turning point, and we've talked about this a lot of this transition period of skinny Steve going kind of turning into big Steve and all of these things. It strikes me in this minute in particular that most of Steve's dialogue, Chris Evans is delivering, their apologies. Like, I'm big and heroic and I've got to catch the bad guy, but oh, sorry about your plate glass window. Sorry, Peggy, sorry for saving your life when you didn't really need a man there to do that and stuff. So you still see that that's part of his character. He's still polite, he's still a gentleman and everything else, even as he's discovered who he's become.
I do have a question about your character and how you interpreted it. I know you were one of the wise guys. You were, the guys on the street, and you were covering for Krueger. Did you feel that your character was part of Hydra, or was he, or were you just a bunch of, Brooklyn wise guys who had been hired by somebody?
I think we were certainly hired by somebody to be on standby for something. I think we were shifty on the sidewalk, right? So we were all sort of like there, something was going to happen, a bit like a few mobsters that knew that, something was going to kick off, sort of thing, So, but I guess I wasn't sure at the time. Not that I wasn't sure, but I kind of had a feeling that it was going to be me. I was chosen. I think it was because of my energy at the time. Maybe this young lad can handle this moment, whereas all these other guys were maybe treated a bit like glorified extras, whatever. Do you know what I mean?
No.
It doesn't really matter. We all made this, we all made it into this little cup. But I think maybe Joe probably thought to himself, well, you're going to be my wise guy and you're going to be the driver and you're going to be in this scene because maybe you can, I don't know, maybe he probably had confidence in me or he trusted the fact that I could handle this moment in this film, having had not much experience on film, he saw what he saw and he thought, well, this scene isn't going to hinder the film. However, I still need someone that can kind of hold it and keep it together right until the crash, sort of thing. So yeah, I guess I had a feeling that by being this wise guy, I was going to be doing something that was no good. Do you know what I
I
mean?
only have one burning question. Did you actually get to drive the car?
I did, yeah.
No, fantastic.
Yeah, I did. I did. I had rehearsals with this very, very cool little truck that they had at Shep at Pinewood, and the inside of this truck. So it was a shell of a truck, right? And then in the inside of this truck, they had this mechanism where you could kind of two pedals, ignition and brake, and then there was a handbrake that kind of made the car sort of like slide, or when you kind of brake a car and it kind of does a bit of a half a dummy or whatever. And again, at the time, I thought, well, this is great. This is awesome. I get to do this and potentially crash the car. However, I didn't crash the car personally. I drove down the street and then we swapped drivers, a stunt man, a very, very, well, I say he became a dear friend of mine, Andy Smart, his name is. He's sadly passed now. He's not with us any longer, but Andy got in the car and crash the car for me, so you see the crash. Then I then get back in the car and do the shot to the head, and then that's how we finalize this scene. But then we also shot that moment again on green screen in a studio,
Oh,
in
interesting.
the same dummy car. Yeah, so you get all the action, you get me in it, blah blah blah. But then we for that moment, because obviously it's Andy at the time that has to crash the car, right? So we had to basically get a close up of me in the car in a studio, and then obviously it cuts back to again me, but now I'm kind of slumped on the side of the steering wheel.
It's amazing how much detail goes into just a little moment like that. All
So
of the
much
thought
detail.
that has to go into it.
So much detail. I mean, and that is why these guys are such superb filmmakers. When you have time and money, you'll spend a whole week on one scene. Whereas I've worked on independent films and I'm shooting six scenes a day. Do you
Yeah,
know what I mean?
amazing.
And
Yeah, oh
that is
yeah.
the difference. They can't afford to make mistakes because things are costing so much money, and they have to deliver to Paramount, or they have to deliver to,
Well, like you worked on EastEnders, which is, I mean that one is it's like a meat grinder. Just every day they gotta bang out some more stuff, and you gotta get all your lines right, and it's maybe two takes, but go, go, go.
You know, it was EastEnders was just one of the shows. I think my longest sitcom was 4 years. My longest sitcom was 4 years, and that was like a few years after Captain America. And that was really like going back to school. It was like training again. You're learning your lines at home. You're up in the morning very early. You're on set and you're shooting three, four scenes a day, sometimes six scenes a day. You're back home learning more lines for the next day, and you're doing that all week. And I did it for 4 years nonstop.
What's the name of that show? Sorry, I
It
don't
was
know.
called it is a British show called Hollyoaks.
Oh, sure. Okay, yeah.
I've heard of it. Yes.
Hollyoaks, soap opera sitcoms. I don't know what you guys call it out there, but we call them soap operas here. I guess they are like family soap opera sitcoms. It's all the same thing, right? They're running shows that run 5 days a week, sometimes six, with an omnibus, with a repeated episode thing on the weekend. And that is kind of what gave me profile in the UK. But I truly think that because of Captain America and having Captain America on my CV, people are like, well, if he's good enough for Captain America, then he's clearly got experience on set to, do you know what I
Yeah,
mean?
that's quite a card to
Absolutely.
play when you're. Oh, by the way, when I was in Captain, and when I was working with Joe Johnston, Joe told me, and here's an inside scoop on.
I think
We do that all the time, right? When we were talking with Joe on our podcast that he asked us to do.
I do have, I mean, is it a strange feeling, like, Richard Armitage, you're working with him back and forth, and he's a little bit slightly more experienced than you were at the time. But I mean, when you're the next year, he's in The Hobbit, and you're like, wait, I know that Thorin guy.
Yes,
I've seen he
exactly.
was in the back of my cab.
You know, Richard and I became such good friends on the show, and then obviously, life takes over, and people, and sometimes these sort of friendships, they don't, it's not that they fizzle away. He was an important man in a very important position, like he had just played this huge assassin in Captain America. Of course, he was going to get lots of work. Of course, he was going to get lots of opportunities and auditions. And I was just this young guy that, gets forgotten about. But yeah, when I saw his bright future that he had ahead of him, I was like, wow, I felt so lucky to have worked with him. And of course, I'm going to go around and tell everyone, I worked with Richard. He was my friend on Captain America. And then I did see him out and about in the industry. And I was like, Rich, remember me? He didn't remember me. And then he was like, oh my God, fab. And because people change, right? I was only a kid. I was only a young man. People change. And he couldn't quite believe. And he said to him, and he was like, what are you doing now? And I told him, he was like, that's fantastic. We all as actors have to cut our teeth in some sort of long running show or a big film or whatever it might be, whether it's a long running stage show like a national t or whatever it might be, and he started somewhere, he started off somewhere, and I had to, one day you never know, we might bump into each other again and we might work together again. Who knows? But again, like I felt so honored and privileged to have worked with these guys.
Well, speaking of CVs, I mean, I've looked at your IMDb, and you've got pretty steady work, which is a rarity in this business. You seem to have a job every year, which is great. What are you working on? What are you working on now? Where are you
So
involved?
I've just had the release of an incredible psychological thriller slash horror called Jitters, and Jitters is one of very few films that you'll see right now about AI. Okay, I know that they've just premiered Scream 7, and that's got a central storyline of AI, but Jitters is kind of about this man that gets innocently put away for a crime he didn't commit. He creates this game to take revenge out on the world. And this game is a simulated kind of AI game that can get in your head if you play it, okay? And if you play it, this clown, without revealing too much, this AI clown that you see that pops up on your screen, plays with you, but also torments you at the same time. And I play Detective Collymore, who is in this world called Prism. It's not London, it's not America, it's like a Gotham. I play this character called Nick Collymore, who gets assigned to all these cases, all these sort of like sudden deaths, and I'm like, what is going on here? Why are there all these people dying? And I play an American, and it's my first American lead. And I've had such great reviews, such great feedback. We premiered the other day at the BAFTA 195 building here, and that's quite an honor and a privilege. It's to have that, to have your film seen at BAFTA. And yeah, we had lots of press, lots of photographers, lots of film reviewers, and yeah, it feels good to finally kind of to get this acknowledgement, not for playing a lead, but for playing a lead and playing an American in a feature film, you know. And a lot of people were confused at the preview. They were like, oh, we actually thought you were an American. And I'm like, no, I'm actually British. Now, me being me, I could hear from time to time the odd British word trying to sneak out of bits of dialogue,
They
but
don't mention Tuesday at all.
yeah, exactly. But I feel that I did it justice. You know, I'm going to leave it into the hands of the audience, and hopefully that people enjoy the film. You can download it now on pre-order it now on Apple TV. But we have a UK and a US release on the 16th and 17th of this month. So
Oh, terrific.
yeah,
Awesome.
if you
Wow.
guys if you guys are into that genre, give it a watch. It sounds great.
I have one do have one question about it. The premise sounds fascinating, but for me personally, I have to know how scary are the clowns?
Level of 1 to 10. The clown is, it's not your traditional clown. He is somewhat futuristic. He's got a futuristic feel to him, but he appears in a very eloquent English manner, you know. So it's a little bit disturbing, but it's not like blood and guts and stabs and blah blah blah. It's all very psychological. There are lots of plot twists in the film, and you're like, well, how is he doing this? Like, how are these people dying? What's going on? Do you know what I mean?
That sounds fascinating. Just
Yeah.
not a big clown guy right here. That's
I'm
all.
sorry to hear that. I'm sorry to hear that. And
But
I think you'll
I'll be
love the
watching.
film. But no. On a scale of 1 to 10, I think in terms of scary, you're probably looking at maybe like a strong 6.
I've got this.
Hal
And
has a very large
you
clown couch that he hides behind when it comes on.
have.
So
Yes. And if
it'll
I have to
be, yeah.
pause it, I'm just going to call you. You're going to talk me through it.
That's
And you can
fine.
tell
I'll
me
hold
it's
your
going to be
hand,
all
no
right.
problem.
All right.
Just make sure you have a very strong pillow beside you, a dark one, preferably.
I thought you were
Leave
going
the
to say a
lights on.
strong drink, but either way.
Yeah, all that,
Why not?
whatever
You
makes you
have
feel better.
curious if you have any future work coming up that in the works that you can talk about.
Yeah, thank you for asking that, actually. I just literally wrapped on a film, on a biopic, my first of a biopic, and it's about the legendary boxer Michael Watson. Michael Watson, in 1991, he was put in a coma by former British champion Chris Eubank, and what happened in that event changed the history of boxing completely in the UK. It's a beautiful story. It's very deep, very profound, and it needed to be told. And I play his trainer, Jimmy Tibbs, who was his trainer at the time. And again, an honor to play this character. He was a Londoner, he was a Cockney. Jimmy Tibbs came from a linear of, you know, his family were criminals, and they were boxers, trainers, doormen, you know, that sort of stuff. And yeah, you know, I went for this audition just like any other audition, and the director took a liking to me, and he said to me, "You've got Jimmy's chin." And you sound, your tonology sounds like the real Jimmy. And I was like, brilliant, I've got the part. But it's never that easy because you kind of you audition and you always hope to get the part. And when I got the part, I was like, wow, not only am I have I got a job in another film, but it's a biopic, it's a true story. So now I've got the pressures of moving like Kim and talking like Kim and training this man how Jimmy trained Michael back in those days. So there was lots of research done, lots of conversations. I approached this man and his family. And the casting, I think, is absolutely spot on.
Wonderful.
People, not only do they sound like the real characters, but they actually look like the real people in 91, in 1991. And I can't wait for this film to come out. And I'm doing some ADR on it right now. But thus far, this is the only thing I can talk about. And all I can say is that I'm a fortunate actor because I was very determined to be an actor, a jobbing actor. And I was very headstrong and I was never deluded to the fact that I may or may not make it. I just continue to put myself out, hone my skills in, learn my craft a bit more. And if it wasn't for Captain America, I probably wouldn't have done half of the jobs I did because there's so much snobbery in my game that because of Captain America, I think I got some respect because of that.
Wow, no, that's great. This is one of the main reasons that we do our podcast, that there's so many wonderful, amazing stories of the people that worked on it. And Fab, you really, I mean, your brief time on screen really, I mean, it was the lever that you're acting was, it
Oh, thank
really
you.
raised the level of the movie.
Yeah,
But
thank you.
well, thanks for being a part of our show. I'd like to also
Thank
thank.
you.
I'd like to thank our audience too for being for continuing to listen to us. We're always available at Camp Lehigh if you'd like to continue the conversation. The Captain America listeners base is on Facebook. If you do like our show, don't forget to subscribe. Leave a like at the podcast service where you found this particular episode. Also, please check out our big website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And please be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.